May I please the court? Tony Capio on behalf...
You're not going to read all those things, are you?
Certainly not, Judge. On behalf of the plaintiff appellant, counsel, Your Honors, this is a race discrimination case where the plaintiff appellant, Vanessa Hobson, an African-American woman, suffered an adverse employment action because she was married to Jim Van Schindel, a Caucasian man, both of whom worked for the United States Post Office. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of the post office. What is being appealed here, Your Honors, is the district court's finding that Hobson has not sufficiently shown that the post office's reason for the adverse action was pretext. So the issue is pretext. Hobson is married to Van Schindel. By way of background, Van Schindel...
The issue is pretext after you find a prima facie case.
Correct, Judge. And the court below did find all four elements of the prima facie case have been met. Our brief and our appeal focused on the aspect of whether or not we have sufficiently shown pretext. Van Schindel used to supervise Hobson in the post office. After Hobson and Van Schindel wed in 2001, the manager of that department, Glenn Smith, transferred Van Schindel out of the apartment. Van Schindel grieved that transfer and was brought back into the department. On the very same day that Van Schindel was brought back in to this operations department, the very same Glenn Smith transferred Hobson out. And that is the adverse action that we are talking about in this case. The articulated reason from the post office was that Hobson had to be reassigned so as to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest where one spouse reports to another spouse.
Is it the appearance or is it a conflict of interest?
It is the appearance, Judge, because there's not a scintilla in the record that there was ever any favoritism shown.
I'm not talking about what's in the record. It was shown. Isn't it a conflict of interest to have a husband supervise his wife, or vice versa?
Inherently a conflict of interest, Your Honor? Arguably, it could be. But, Judge, what we are urging this court...
It isn't an apparent, though. It's obvious.
Our position is this. Even if there was a conflict of interest, be it real or whether it appeared so, the adverse action was removing Hobson from the department itself, moving her to a separate department that had nothing to do, that did not know her job, putting her in a little office, cutting her off from her support staff, and doing all those other things that were outlined in the brief. What they could have done is said, well, instead of Hobson reporting to Van Schindel, the husband, simply report to somebody else within the operations department. Smith himself.
They should change it for that one person.
They should, yes.
Just Judge. For that one person.
Yes, Judge, because nowhere else in the country is the reporting structure. They have changed, they have made a unique situation in this office. Everywhere else in the country, the person with Hobson's job reports to somebody in operation. Hobson has pointed to specific evidence in the record that suggested the post office reasons pretext. She has pointed to the fact that prior to Hobson and Van Schindel, there was no policy regarding one spouse reporting to another. She has pointed to the fact that no other conjugal couples were ever involuntarily separated. She has pointed out the fact that only in the case of Hobson and Van Schindel did the manager, Glenn Smith, take the extraordinary step of actually going to the courthouse and doing a public search record to find a marriage certificate.
Well, that's better than going on a rumor, isn't it?
Judge, I imagine it is growing on a rumor, but let's think about that for a second.
Well, think about what he first told Van Schindel when there was some rumor or something, a suspicion that they were dating, and he said, no, they weren't. And he said, well, if that ever changes, let me know. know, he obviously didn't let him know, and didn't let him know he got married, and maybe for that reason. But when you talk about the perception or conflict, while they were dating, but before they were married, he made the decision to give her a $400 bonus. Now, that may be totally merited and everything, but that's just one reason why this kind of policy, or at least this idea of not having married people rate one another, has some significance.
Let's say it does. Let's say that the policy is a legitimate policy. Why only Hobson and Van Schindel? That's the question. Let's say it is a legitimate policy. We talked with Mr. Simmons, the head of the HR department, and if anybody's going to be transferred in the post office, he's going to know about it, and he's going to know why. Page 80, this is at Exhibit 32, Exhibit 3 of the record. Was it true that in the year 2001, at least some of the spouses were reporting to other spouses? Yes. Page 81, in 2001, did you know that the people on this list, we gave them a list of all the conjugal couples reporting to each other, were married to each other? Answer, I knew some of them were. Page 85, I apologize for not making myself clear. Prior to 2001, did I ever? Did you ever take it upon yourself to reassign one spouse who was reporting to another spouse? Answer, not if I didn't know about it, or not if I knew about it. Question, well, my question is, had it ever happened? Answer, no. This is not merely Hobson and Van Schindel saying that it was this policy, if there was such a thing, was only applied to them. This is the head of the HR department of the post office itself. Does that not raise a question regarding the veracity of the appellee's reason? If conflict of interest was a legitimate reason for transferring Hobson, then why was only she transferred? If conflict of interest was a legitimate reason, then why not simply change her reporting structure to somebody within her own department so she didn't have to report to Van Schindel? Why move her down the hall into a corner office, by the way, reporting to a black manager and a black supervisor? Why cut her off from her support staff?
It was the office next door, wasn't it?
It was in the same building, Judge.
I have to say, I'm confused about the geography of the office. She said she had to walk 300 feet to get to her old location or something, and I thought the offices were next to each other. Maybe this is a huge building. I don't know. But
it's a post office building, I imagine.
Well, they're always too big, aren't they?
Yes. If the court accepts the court below's opinion that Hobson has met four elements of the prima facie case, then that fourth element, that people who were not interracial couples were treated better, and that has been met, then we suggest that our burden showing pretext has also been met. And this court faced the same circumstance in a couple years ago in Gordon versus United Airlines, where he said that a showing that similarly situated employees belonging to a different racial group received more favorable treatment, in other words, that fourth element of the prima facie case, can also serve as evidence that the employer's proffered reason was pretext. We ask this court to reverse the decision below and remand the case. Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. This case is about both pretext and a prima facie case, Your Honor. And the appellant has established neither of them. I want to read from you a little bit of the rest of the transcript that the appellant read with respect to what the Postal Service manager said about what he did when he discovered, if he discovered, there were other individuals who were married and in a direct reporting relationship. This is attached to my brief in the appendix, pages A20 and 21. The appellant read, question, was it true that in the year 2001, at least some of them were reporting to their spouses? Yes.
Is it true that they continued to report to their spouses in the post office until the post office promulgated a specific written policy regarding spouses reporting to one another? Answer. It wasn't because the Postal Service promulgated some. I mean, when he found out about it, there was something done with them. There is no evidence in the record that indicates that the Postal Service ignored other couples who were married and in a direct reporting relationship. There just isn't evidence. There's no evidence at all that the manager who separated Hobson from her husband was motivated by anything other than his honest belief that having one spouse report to another spouse created a conflict of interest. There's just no evidence.
How large is the unit, the department that they were employed in?
They're part of the Northern Illinois District of the Post Office. That encompasses much of Northern Illinois other than Chicago. I don't know the exact number of employees. The manager who made the decision was the manager of the Operations Program Support Department. I don't know how big that department is. There was certainly many people under his supervision. But there's certainly no allegation, even allegation, let alone evidence, that the manager that made the specific decision supervised anybody else that he knew was married and in a direct reporting relationship. None whatsoever. So the appellant is trying to establish pretext by showing, although the appellant has no evidence of similar situated couples, but showing even if she had some evidence, there's no evidence that the supervisor who made the decision supervised these other couples in another part of the post office. There can be no inference that a jury could conceivably draw that the manager who made this decision was motivated by anything other than his honest belief that having one spouse report to another spouse.
In this deposition, a human resources person, for this area of the Illinois or for nationally?
For this area of Illinois. Mr. Simmons is the manager of HR for the Northern Illinois District of the Post Office. Appellant has also questioned why we transferred, why the manager decided to transfer Hobson to where he was transferred. Well, that's a business decision. Whether or not she could have reported to someone in his department still other than her husband, he determined there was no one she could report to. And so he took what was the eminently reasonable step of taking her entire job out of his department and putting it next door in a different department, doing the same job for the same pay, the same benefits. There is no adverse action in this. In fact, this is the very definition of a lateral transfer. If there is ever such a thing as a lateral transfer, this is it. It's the exact same job with a different reporting structure. Hobson has made some question as to the investigation that the manager performed. The investigation was 100% appropriate and reasonable and measured. When he found out that the supervisor had not informed him, despite the specific direction, to let the manager know that the supervisor was involved with his subordinate in not just a personal relationship, but they were actually married at this point, he drove half a mile from a meeting he was having at the Palatine PNDC Processing and Distribution Center to the courthouse, got the record of the marriage, went back to the post office, and in the next several days had a meeting with not just the supervisor, but with a Postal Service attorney, with the head of labor relations for that district of the post office, and told the supervisor that he believed there was a conflict and that Hobson and supervisor needed to be separated. If this court doesn't have any additional questions, I'll respectfully ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district courts in dismissing the employment discrimination lawsuit against the Postal Service.
Thank you, counsel. You've got 1 minute, sir.
Thank you, Judge. This is a question of fact, Your Honor. This court has said time and again that employers' motivation, or just people's motivations in generally, is the prototypical question of fact for a jury. Our burden does not rise to preponderance of the evidence at any point in the summary judgment motion. This is still a summary judgment motion, and questions of fact, the burden's never going to rise above whether there's a genuine issue. And if there's somebody says one thing and somebody says another, we ask that a jury decide that. And that's all the burden that we have to carry, is that there's somebody credible saying something else and putting a material fact in dispute. And I believe that we have done that. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We will proceed to case number 3, please.